When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Score, the podcast. The only show taking you inside the studios of the world's most celebrated composers and musicians.
Coming to you this week from Santa Monica inside the Remote Control Productions studio, I'm your host Kenny Holmes alongside my co-host Robert Kraft.
Hey
Robert.
Kenny. Hi. I'm so happy to be here. This is not only one of the most wonderful locations in film music, Remote Control.
It's a mecca.
It is truly a mecca, but Ramin in this wonderful room, which is kind of reserved for, in many ways, a very special talent, the corner suite, as it were.
And the corner office.
Yeah, corner office. So Ramin being in this room, it'll be fun to bring him in just a minute and ask him some questions about Westworld, Game of Thrones, all the great stuff
he does. Great stuff. Also want to introduce our executive producer on the board, Matt Schrader.
Hey, Matt.
How cool to be here, guys.
Yeah, this is really, I'm pumped. Obviously, you know Ramin's work, Ramin Djawadi, and it is Djawadi, we found out.
Djawadi, yeah.
It's commonly said wrong, Djawadi, but it's Djawadi.
We are setting the record
we're
straight.
Trying to, yep. Yeah, from here on out, it's being said correctly.
Good.
Huge hits on TV, of course, Game of Thrones, Westworld, which is returning for season two this Sunday. Also, a huge new series with Amazon, Jack Ryan, that's coming out later this summer, Person of Interest, Prison Break, and then, of course, big movies, Iron Man, A Wrinkle in Time, and Pacific Rim, and also some huge video games, Medal of Honor 1 and 2, and Gears of War 4.
All over the place, all kinds of big video games, TV shows, movies.
I think it's kind of awesome to even imagine this level of output for people that think about being composers. This is a level of music creation that is, I think it just transcends a kind of human ability. It's a superhuman ability to write this amount of music. And as we know in Ramin's work, it's great music.
Also in today's episode, a new music psychology series featuring Dr. Sulan Tan, who is prominent in our film score, a film music documentary. And then we're also going to play Name That Score with Ramin and the topic today, Matt?
Hans Zimmer scores from the last 20 years or so.
Nice.
Some awesome. Great ones.
Perfect.
Some of them that Ramin may have even been involved in.
And probably right here or down the hall, we're here in Remote Control where Hans' studio is located as well.
Yeah, and he used to be right in this room that we're sitting in. When I first came out here, Hans was here. This was pretty much the extent of Remote Control. Now, of course, it's a whole city block of composers and great studios, but Ramin being in this room is special because you got to imagine the vibe is strong.
Do you remember any movies Hans scored while he was working out of this room? Were you involved in any of those?
We worked on a movie called Broken Arrow.
Mm. Oh yeah, okay.
John Travolta, Christian Slater.
I remember that
and
movie.
I remember one aspect of that, which is Hans said at one point in Hans's brilliant, insightful way, you know, this is really a Western. And I said, well, it's actually kind of a nuclear disaster movie.
But and they're out in the desert,
right.
And it's
he
very...
said, no, it's a Western, like one of those kind of Ennio Morricone spaghetti Western sounds. You know, we should get that sound of Duane Eddy playing the kind of twangy guitar. And I thought, that's an interesting idea. But in Hans's world and mind and inventiveness, he did the next indicated thing. He called Duane Eddy, who I didn't even know where you would do that. And Duane Eddy came out to this room and played the guitar on Broken Arrow. And it was really magnificent. I hesitate to say, with all due respect, it might have been my favorite part of that movie.
We'll show pictures of the room that we're in at our website, score-movie.com/podcast.
A lot of cool stuff in here. All right, I want to get into something really cool that we came across on the internet. The Amper AI... This is a software, if you need some scoring done, some music to be created.
It's interesting. There's a bunch of silly... I have a couple clips that I pulled so we could chat about this, but Silicon Valley is pumping a bunch of money into this. It's a startup that is they bill themselves as computer learned composing, and the idea is you got a robot that is basically writing. You know, I'm sure it has certain parameters that someone actually, you know, wrote, and then it extends certain things or contracts them. But I got a couple of clips. You guys want to hear a couple?
I'd like to hear. And I wonder at what point the computer program says, I don't really like those ideas. Can you give me something else? Or maybe that doesn't happen when you have a robot writing your music.
I don't know if it will. And basically the way this works, it's functioning now. So anyone who's listening to this could go to their website, ampermusic.com. It's this tool. It's all you can do it through your regular web browser. But you pick a number of categories, hip-hop, cinematic, classic rock, folk music, 90s pop is one of the genres you can pick. And then there's these subcategories that you can select. And I have a couple of these, and you basically pick how long you want them to run. It'll render something out, and you get something like this. So I got a couple of these cinematic ones that are supposed to be essentially film scores.
Can I just ask before you play it, do you feed it any adjectives like
nothing.
Sad, romantic, nothing. Okay,
nothing.
Great.
It's just you select one of these terms that I'll
cinematic.
Read. The first one here is dark heroic is the first one. You let it render for a couple seconds and you get this. It's pretty basic stuff.
This is, I was going to say, it's bare bones, right? You don't get to pick tempo. You can't match the score to a scene.
It's just basically a mood. So it definitely has some limitations. So it's
how polite do I have to be when I hear that piece of music? Because
we don't expect you to be polite about it.
With all due respect to ampermusic.com, it's like the backing track of a Kylie Minogue kind of 90s mid-chart hit.
With all due respect to Kylie Minogue, too.
Baby, I don't want you. So it's sort of... If that's dark and cinematic, that's a movie I don't want to see. Next.
Next.
But how do you really feel?
Here's dark atmospheric. It doesn't feel that dark.
It's obviously samples, and I wonder how many times you enter this in and you get the same song. Like, how many options are there, really?
I have a message for all composers. Please listen carefully. Your jobs are not in jeopardy yet.
That was dark atmospheric. This is inspirational atmospheric.
I'm inspired to move to the next one.
I'm inspired to hire Ramin to score my next movie.
This sounds like someone would walk down the aisle to... Like as the flower girl's coming
or
down.
Or maybe be in a box being rolled down the aisle.
Oh, maybe there's a market for that. Maybe this is wedding songs or something.
Generate your wedding anthem.
The last clip that I have here from their cinematic package is epic percussion. So think for a minute about what that'll sound like. Epic percussion. And let me play this.
I have a question. When does the epic part start? Okay.
Again,
this is really good to know that people are actually... First of all, if they're investing in that, I must be doing something wrong because I would like to...
Well, it just seems like a sample library, and how many possible options could there be? At a certain point, you're going to either hear the same thing again or... I assume they're going
to
expand it.
Appears to be that there's a number of different moods, and the biggest thing is you can customize the length of them, and it doesn't chop it, you know, in an ugly way somewhere in the middle. It's a clean in, and then it's all...
So it'll like sting out.
So the rhythm adjusts a little bit. That seems to be the biggest thing here.
And I think at the risk of being slightly academic, I was taught that the composer is the last writer on the film. So the composer has a real point of view and is a real writer and brings that to the film. These are kind of custom-made wallpapers that you put up against
commercial
an image.
Jingles or
right.
something. Yeah.
So they're not written with a point of view. They're just a kind of a vibey thing. And obviously, I'm going to be oversensitive to the fact that they feel very static and unemotional. But God bless them for everything they're doing. Bless their little heart. You know, speaking of... kind of music that really doesn't have a point of view. Let's go to the exact opposite, which is Ready Player One.
Yes.
Fantastic Alan Silvestri score, one of the great composers, and also 80s music. And
a lot of tracks.
Kind of amazing choice of songs. I actually have here the list of songs, which include Prince and the Bee Gees. Really kind of incredible stuff. They had Twisted Sister and Blondie. Pretty remarkable choice. Of course, it makes sense in the story, but one of the interesting things about a song score like this is how it encourages new listeners to go back and find those tracks. And actually, I read how the Ready Player One use of these songs has increased on all the charts.
Oh, yeah.
These songs coming back, getting new sales, new streams.
It makes sense.
Well, how many movies do you watch and go, oh, or songs you hear and you go, oh, that's from that movie? And my dad will be like, actually, no, that's from the record when it first came out.
Right.
But, you know, they revive some of these classics and put them into films. And it's interesting, too, because Spielberg is not normally a soundtrack with songs kind of director. Normally, he's a score-driven director, so this is kind of a new approach for him.
It's new for him, and he also gives a lot of props to some folks that helped him. Not only the cast had ideas, but Toby Emmerich, who's head of that studio, who was initially at a record label. He was at Atlantic Records. He apparently worked with Steven Spielberg on picking songs and making sure that they all work. So it's a very interesting point of view, and kind of cool, and clearly not Amper AI generated. Real people picked those songs.
Let's get away from Amper and talk about
some
big scores coming up after the break. We're bringing him into the studio here. Ramin Djawadi is going to sit down with us. We're going to talk about Game of Thrones, Westworld. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hey, Matt Schrader here. We're back to the show in 15 seconds, but a quick thank you to everyone who's been telling a friend about Score the Podcast. We're one of the fastest growing entertainment podcasts out there right now, and that's thanks to you telling a friend. You're probably thinking of somebody else right now that enjoy the show. If it's safe to do so, hit pause and let them know about Score the Podcast. It helps keep this show going. Now back to the show.
That's an amazing piece of music to listen to, and also to have the honor of being here with the composer of that piece of music, sitting right across from me in his beautiful studio in Santa Monica. How great to hear the Game of Thrones theme sitting and looking at Ramin
Djawadi. Yes, thanks for joining us, Ramin.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And really exciting for me, Ramin, because I can honestly say, as we've talked about, I was there when you were just starting. And to now be in your presence and know what you've accomplished, and it makes me proud. And proud
big,
of you, certainly.
Big stuff. Game of Thrones, Westworld's coming back. You know him from Prison Break, Person of Interest, all kinds of huge hit TV shows. Jack Ryan, which is...
That'll be big.
Yeah, that's a big one. And then, of course, Iron Man. Who could forget Iron Man?
And all the video games.
Yeah. Huge success. We're so happy to have you on the program. This is kind of a crazy time for composers with live concerts. You're doing these huge shows. What do you think about where film music is going with the live concerts? I mean, people are going to sit and watch scores from TVs and film in person.
Yeah, I think it's an incredible time for that. The fact that people are coming out and listening to instrumental music and listening to music from their favorite movie or video game or TV show, I think that's an incredible thing. And to be able to put on these concerts now... It's been a lot of hard work. I've learned a lot, but they are so much fun.
Can you tell all of us a little what a Game of Thrones evening is like, a live evening? What happens?
Well, the idea behind it was, I mean, first of all, it started out about now actually 4 years ago. I mean, it started out with the idea with the showrunners in my studio. I was playing them some cues, and they said, you know what, Ramin, you should do a concert. And I took that idea and I said, all right, I want to do it. Let's do a concert, but how about let's do a whole tour and let's do a concert like it's never been done before. Let's design our own stage. Let's have footage from the show. And Game of Thrones just lend itself to things like, you know, there's dragons in the show. So I thought, well, we have dragons. So how about some pyro? So, it you know, we're north of the wall. How about some snow? And so I just really wanted the audience to feel like they're in Westeros when they come see their favorite show and relive all the scenes from all the different seasons. And yeah, that's how the idea then came together.
Kind of a new approach to a live concert experience, because you're immersing them with things from the show. But at the end of the day, it's a classical concert.
Correct. And that's why we call it a concert experience, because I really wanted to point out that there's more to it than just, in quotation, just an orchestral concert. I mean, I really wanted it to open it up to a young audience that might not necessarily just go to see an orchestra play, but then when they actually did, I realized, oh my God, that's what this instrument looks like. You know, so I really
Is it a full orchestra?
It's a full orchestra and choir.
Wow.
We have a bunch of odd instruments that I use on the show, duduk, didgeridoo, a hammered dulcimer. I could go on and on. And I think it's just people see, oh, that's what that instrument is that I've been hearing on this aria theme, you know, for so long. So I think it's just a great experience. But I wanted people to know it's okay to have fun at a classical concert.
I think it's really revolutionary in some ways to bring an audience that they go to Coachella and they see one guy with a laptop and they think that's how music is made. So to see actual players,
what's it like for you being up on the stage, because you do these songs and these incredible themes, but it's played in people's homes and you don't get to see their reaction. So how is that different for you, or is it a fulfilling thing to watch their faces as the themes are played?
It's been absolutely amazing. I mean, I haven't been back in my teenage days and college days. In bands, I was on stage a lot, but ever since I've started composing, I'm in a room by myself with no windows, nothing, and I never get to see the reaction from the audience, you know, how they react to the score and how that all plays out. So doing this in a concert setting and seeing the audience react is phenomenal. You have real players playing the music and you have an audience react immediately to it. It's absolutely fantastic.
You know, on Game of Thrones, one of the things we actually talked about just a couple days ago and wondered, so you get to, I assume, read ahead in a Game of Thrones story or script. And, you know, you have a huge worldwide audience absolutely desperate to know what happens. Do you have to, in some ways, disguise some of the music that you might hear in an early episode of the next season that might show what's about to happen? Do you have to be careful about it? Can you give any? I'm not asking you to give secrets to us, of course, but does that ever come up as an issue that you have to be very select about how you foretell any narrative elements?
No, absolutely. I mean, the music is another character in the show, and what in a show like Game of Thrones, I think what's fun with the music is you can steer the audience in one direction, actually guide them with the music, or actually misguide them and actually play something different, and they therefore then think something else is going to happen. So with this show, it's very calculated, and I heavily rely on the showrunners David Benioff and Dan Weiss. They've been very good with their vision of the music, and they've been very good with telling me, okay, this theme you need to develop and need to write in season two, because down the road this is going to happen. Like, for example, the Lannister theme we set up in season two for then the Red Wedding to come in season three, and then when that theme plays, people go, wait, well, why is the Lannister theme being played here? Reigns of Castamere, what's going on in that? You know, so that the music actually sets up something is about to happen.
Perfect.
What is that conversation like when you're having that, talking with the showrunners about something? Do they say, we're not gonna tell you what it is, but can you work in a new thing and it'll make sense in a couple episodes once we tell you what the story
is? How much
is.
Do you know? Yeah.
Or will they fill you in on what be coming?
If they will fill me in. I usually, even though I'm really good in keeping secrets, if I don't have to know, I prefer not to know.
Sure.
Wow.
But if I have to know, they will tell me and they say, we need this theme to do this down the road because da 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 da. And then they actually will tell me. So
it's really wonderful and so interesting. I'm just amazed by the answer in a couple ways, and one of them is that you have that kind of relationship with the show's creators that isn't just you take care of the music or I don't know what do you think? But it feels like they're really involved and direct you as to musically what narrative elements they want.
Absolutely. I mean, a big part of why I write the music the way I write the music in Game of Thrones is because of David and Dan. I mean, we discuss every single scene, instrumentation. I mean, everything about the music is closely collaborated with the two.
It's probably why the show is so great, because they're so hands-on in a lot of ways.
Well, and the music is such a character, like you said. There's so many themes, and sometimes, you know, you start on a wide shot, and the music sort of tells you where you're headed next in the show, and it just really drives it.
So viewers should be paying attention to the what's going on musically, the storytelling happening there is what you're telling us.
For
if
sure.
If you hear a theme, it seems a little, huh, that's different. Yeah, maybe that means something.
Absolutely. Music is always telling a story, and it's a big part of the show.
Well, and that fan base, they're always on to stuff, right?
Definitely. Yeah, no, they play close attention. I mean, that also in season six, I mean, that big piece with Cersei, there we also actively decided, actually, let's not play the Lannister theme, which could have been the obvious for Cersei. And we said, no, let's have a new piece. And we even decided actively to use the piano, which until that point had never been used in the show. In six seasons, there was never any piano.
Wow.
So we said, the piano itself, people will kind of sit up and go, wait, what's that sound? We haven't heard this before. Something's off. Something's not
remarkable
right.
Remarkable attention to detail. I'm now going to listen even more carefully. Well, I mean, I was told a story which sounds kind of mythic now, but I don't know if it's accurate. I know that you went to Berkeley, and a big shout out to Berkeley, because I took piano lessons at Berkeley, and now I'm a professor of music and media in Berkeley, Valencia. So I have great affection for Berkeley, and I say all that because I know that the entire Berkeley undergraduate and graduate groups are going to be listening to this, because you are a hero there, of course. I was told, and tell me if any of this is accurate, someone said, you know, Ramin, you know, it was almost an epic story. He hitchhiked across the country, you know, on the back of a truck with a guitar and a backpack, and knocked on Hans Zimmer's back door, and he was, could I have a glass of water and maybe you have something I could sweep up? I just want to work for you. Is any of that? I was actually told that Ramin came to Hans Zimmer's studio, remote control, knocked on the door and said, is there anything I can do? Any of that even close to accurate?
Pretty much.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I did go to Berkeley, which I absolutely loved. It was
an
incredible experience. And I did show up with a guitar and a suitcase and went to Berkeley and studied there. And it was just, fantastic. But then by pure coincidence, I got a hookup with Hans and what is now Remote Control Productions. And I just kind of showed up here and was allowed to help out. I didn't do any music at first at all.
Do you remember your first day here, what you did? Was it making tea or?
It was actually fixing samplers, I think, just making sure that they were all loaded. And this was back in the days with Emu samplers, like before really computers took off. And funny enough, I didn't know anything about technology. I really didn't know much. And of course, I just lied my way through it. And they asked me, do you know about this, all these pieces of equipment? I said, of course I do.
Jump on Google and figure it out.
Yeah, so no, this was before Google. Right. And this was right before Google took off. So I had to figure it out with manuals or...
Oh, wow.
Actually, the community here is actually really great. So some of the other assistants, actually, I would just run out in the hallway and say, I don't know how to restart that. What do I do? And they would help me out. So I had to learn quickly.
What's that apprenticeship thing like now that you're... doing big projects, do you give that back? Are you answering the door to somebody knocking, saying, hey, I'd love to work here?
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, the last three or four people that have worked with me all came out of the kitchen here from Remote Control. So they did internships, and I needed a new person to work with me, and I would just grab them from there.
I think we're probably going to have to edit this out of the podcast, because you're about to have 750,000
people.
Yeah, we
won't put the
address up. Here come the emails. Yeah.
Okay.
Or just write Ramin Djawadi care of Remote Control Kitchens. But that's a wonderful story. And I'd also, do you remember, because it's so interesting to hear someone's progression, was there a day where someone said, can you write this? Can you orchestrate this? You've just plugged in the samplers. Do you have any ideas for the rhythm for this cue? How did that bridge occur that you walked over to say, I'm actually musical and capable?
It was a slow progress. I mean, the big thing was to, and I always say this when I talk to Berklee students or any students or people starting out, it's really, the big thing is it's about the attitude, you know, about working hard and having a good attitude. So they wanted just to see here, can I work these long hours? Am I up for anything, you know, helpful? And then I slowly, actually I worked with another German composer named Klaus Badelt, and he had me start out with arrangements and programming. Mm. First I just did drum programming, and then I was allowed to do more and more little by little. I would say my big break was probably on the first Pirates movie, where, and Hans can tell the story a lot better than me. I'm not very good at telling that story, but it was, there was this one scene that was kind of up for grabs, and it was already, it was late at night already, and I just kind of raised my hand and said, hey, can I have a go at this? And everybody was like, yeah, sure, why not? And so I stayed the night and just wrote the cue overnight, and it, Gore and Hans, everybody really liked the cue, and then from then it really kind of took off for me.
Do you think back and say, man, I'm glad I raised my hand? That kind of changed everything,
which,
right?
Is not even in my nature. I'm usually pretty quiet, and I'm not very a very pushy person. I just kind of believe in hard work, but it was one of those things where I was here and just carefully offered my help, and they said, sure, why not?
It was your moment.
I think it's the best advice. You said two things that are absolutely critical. Attitude is great, being willing, and the fact that you were quiet means that when you raised your hand, that meant you were ready to go into battle. You didn't do it on air. Hey, I'll do that. Hey, I'll do that. Hey, I'll do that. Like a puppy. You said, this is the moment, and I think it's a wonderful, wonderful story.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk Westworld. It's coming back. Everyone's excited, so we'll break that down. Also, reminisce a little on Iron Man, but first, a little music psychology.
The Inside Track with music psychologist Dr. Sulan Tan.
At the end of a musical phrase, music can sound like it's still continuing and has more to say, or like it has ended. In a study by Thompson, Russo, and Sinclair, they showed that whether the music feels like it has ended or will continue can affect to what degree we feel like a film scene has ended or will continue. Compare the second and third Matrix films, scored by Don Davis. Here's how The Matrix Reloaded ends. And here's the ending of The Matrix Revolutions. One leaves us at a point of high tension musically. The other gives more closure, but still leaves some degree of openness. It's also possible that people read different degrees of closure into the same musical endings. For instance, here's the end of Up with music by Michael Giacchino. A number of research studies suggest that some listeners focus more on what happens to the melody, the high notes you hear in the piano. In that case, the ending is musically quite open. Others are more sensitive to what's happening in the harmony, the low notes you hear in the piano. If that's you, this ending will feel more closed because the last chords return back to the tonic chord or home base. This allows individual viewers to feel different degrees of openness and closure in the music and plays an important part in shaping the way they experience this final scene. Lastly, lack of closure can also be powerful. At the end of Inception, Hans Zimmer's music builds up expectations for a grand musical close. Instead, we come to a quiet ending with the final image of a spinning top and a few soft strains of sound. The picture and sound cut off abruptly. Not only is there no closure musically, there's no closure sonically, as the final tone doesn't fade away naturally. We finish that sound in our minds as we do the meaning of the closing sequence. So in the final scene, the last musical notes are as important as the last visual image. To tune where on that scale of tension and resolution, we're finally left at the end of a film.
Dr. Sulan Tan is a leading researcher in the study of film music and the author of many books, including her latest, Psychology of Music, From Sound to Significance, available now at score-movie.com/podcast.
Hey, we're back with Ramin Djawadi in his wonderful studio. That was the theme from Westworld, which we're listening to, and it's a perfect day to talk about this because
this weekend
we have the return of Westworld, and with
yes,
and we listened to that amazing piece of music that you put together for the trailer. It's a cover.
It's Nirvana, right?
It is
Heart-shaped
and,
box.
Is it ordinary? I wanted to ask you a question about the Westworld, the opening sequence, but is it ordinary for you to score a trailer?
Not really. I mean, normally the composer of a show or movie is not involved with the trailer. But in this case, I was, and I think it's actually great because you really can stay true to the show and really make it's the same sound. It's part of what we do on the show and these cover songs, and so I have to give the showrunner.
Did they bring you this song?
Jonah said, you know, let's do this song, and can you do an arrangement? And this is something that's been also in season one, and of course now in season two, we have lots coming that where he will have ideas. You know, same like on Game of Thrones, I'm working very closely with the showrunners, and he will have ideas, and I'll go out and execute them and bring them back, and we listen and tweak. And
does that cue even appear in the season, if you can say, or is that just for the trailer? Because that's a lot of work just for the trailer. That's pretty cool that they spent the time on that.
Yeah, but it's such a substantial trailer. People are so excited to see this coming back, and I had a blast doing it.
If that was released as its own piece of music, it's really incredible.
They should do that with all kinds of classic songs. Yeah. That would be awesome.
Ooh, I think we have a new project for you. In between doing a Game of Thrones concert tour, scoring 11
Yeah, you don't need
projects.
Sleep. Nobody needs sleep.
Of course, I'm sure you've been asked
about
this.
The track is actually out.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it is.
I'll look for
out.
It. Yeah. One of the things that amazed me was the Westworld opening sequence and how they actually used your piano to have, you know, the skeleton playing.
They animated it.
And this is my chance to ask, whose idea? Was that surprising to you? Was that, here's what we want to do. We want a piano theme because we want to show a kind of disembodied hand playing. How did that come together? Because it's so wonderful.
Yeah, what was nice with the creation of the main title was that actually Game of Thrones, for example, was the opposite, where the visuals already existed, and I wrote the music to the visuals. This one was different because the visuals were created in parallel while I was writing the music.
Wow.
So Jonah actually showed me storyboards of what they had in mind, and it was all about the creation and of, you know, with robots and everything. So he said the music kind of needs to resemble that too, and so it needs to start very small and then just kind of build from there. And so then the good thing was that we had the theme that the piece was written, so it could we were able to animate to the music. And then I don't know who had the idea, but then the idea came of, well, let's actually film the fingers and have it animated so that this actually is playing the actual
notes. It's so rare, as you know, in movies. I will always be the one that sees someone in the scene is playing piano and you're hearing piano, but it's completely divorced from what the hands are doing. You know, you see somebody playing and you say, their hands are playing the upper register, but all you hear is a bass line. Right. How can they do that? This is spot on. You see him play. You see that hand play the notes of the theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually filmed my hands playing the piano.
Oh, it's your hands.
Yeah, it was recreated.
Ooh, that's cool.
There's a big secret, big reveal on Score the Podcast.
And we also, in the first season, we did it with the player piano where we would actually... I would send out the notes and create it that it could be that the player piano could be recreated. So when you see the piano roll rolling, you can actually see the actual notes being played of what you hear. So it is actually accurate.
That's cool. So yeah. You're involved in other creative aspects beyond the literal music. It's you're also kind of a consultant on other musical principles that they're using in the show.
Right. Yeah. It's just because the player piano is such a big part of the show, so we just really wanted to make that it's accurate.
Yeah, it is a character in the show. You see it so many
times. And so great to have the composer involved in the filmmaking.
Can I ask a question, too, about Westworld, if you guys don't mind? One of the big principles that is in the story is this idea of the human world kind of crossing over with this, you know, robotic world, and you're not really sure where the edges are. What do you think of musically? How do you approach that? Because I noticed a couple things and some pieces of music from the soundtrack that and in the show as well that sound very synthy. It's kind of some reversed sounds and some other things that are just almost accents over piano and some other things like that. But I assume those are all consciously placed,
like a robotic touch to human music kind of thing.
Definitely. I mean, I think the beauty of the show from a musical point is that there's this wide range. On the one hand, we're in Westworld, so I used acoustic guitars and all these organic instruments to kind of represent that time period. But at the same time, because they are robots and it's a theme park, you can go way the other way and just use synthesizers when you're inside the control room. So there's definitely a very accurately placed sound elements, and I experimented a lot with just creating sounds for the show.
Speaking of creating sounds, I want to switch over to some blockbuster movies. Going back to Iron Man, you worked on that with Jon Favreau. It was kind of the first big Marvel movie. You really went heavy with the electric guitar, and it's, you know, over the orchestra, and it's very noticeable, and it's a big part of the score. What inspired that? Was that your idea, or was it Favreau what was that conversation like?
Yeah, again, I have to give big credit to John on this one, because I mean, on every project before I start, I always like to talk to my director or producer, and just before I even write, I just listen and hear what is their vision, what do they want to do with their film, and you get a lot of information from that. And John was the one that kept saying, no, I want more guitar, but Tony Stark he's a rock and roll guy, and you know, he's fun, and let's make it more guitar. And John is a big reason why it's so guitar heavy, and I think it made it for a very original idea. I think it's a great idea.
How much of this came from? It was influenced by, I suppose, the Black Sabbath, Iron Man, the song. Was there a certain influence that came out of that with the guitars as well?
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean the name itself was kind of obvious, and definitely that was an influence. I mean, for me, even it was rock music was always a big influence, because growing up as a teenager, I was heavily influenced by rock and metal, and a guitarist, in fact, my main instrument. I can actually play that better. I'm not a good piano player. So that was right up my alley. So I love working with guitar.
Can you tell us a little about Jack Ryan and what's coming up? Have you started writing for it?
I have started writing on it. I'm not sure if I can say that much at this
when
point.
When does it? I'm just curious. When does it come up?
Is it August?
It's August. Mm. Yeah, it'll come out in August, and very excited about the show. I think it's really good. Great writing. Great acting again. And
that's great.
I'm just very excited about it.
That's good. I'm just curious. Is it? Do you feel it's a? Is it an acoustic or an orchestral? Is it electronic? Is it rock? Is it pop? I'm just curious. The sound.
It's a bit of both, actually. It's definitely there's orchestral elements, but it's also electronic. It's a nice hybrid, I would say.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up after the break, we're playing the game
Name That Score.
And the topic, Matt?
Hans Zimmer scores. I think, Ramin, you may have worked on a couple of these. So
Right around the hall. Right around the hallway here.
That's right.
All right, we'll be right back with Name That Score right after this.
Hey, Matt Schrader here, director of Score, a film music documentary. For the latest news from the film music world, follow us on Facebook. Just search Score, a film music documentary. Or let us know who you want to hear next on the show on Twitter, at Score the Podcast.
Welcome back to Score the Podcast. We're inside Remote Control Productions here with Ramin, and we're going to jump right into it. It's time for Name That Score.
Here we go.
Get ready to play Name That Score! The film music game where a perfect score means you, yes you, could be a winner. Now let's play Name That Score!
Here we go. So today's theme is Hans Zimmer scores. Ramin, you may have worked on a couple of these, so you might have a slight advantage, but all of the clips will be played in reverse. Because these are Hans Zimmer themes, they are from fairly prominent movies. We will play them backwards, and if anyone gets all five questions right, we give away a prize on our Twitter account.
Hey.
Just mention Name That Score at Score the Podcast. So today's game is Hans Zimmer score themes. Question one. All right, that's clip number one. The options here are Gladiator, Inception, and The Thin Red Line.
Can we hear the clip again? Because I like it when you say the titles.
Oh, sure.
And then we get to hear it.
So we have Gladiator, Inception,
he's trying to cheat.
The Thin
this
Red Line.
Doing. Good.
Robert.
I'm going to say that's from Bye Bye Birdie. I don't know why, but I have... I'm going to say that it's not Thin Red Line because it's not a part of the Thin Red Line score. I recognize being kind of up-tempo. This is a long way of saying I don't know. I'm going with Inception for no other reason.
Robert goes with Inception. Our options again, Gladiator, Inception, The Thin Red Line.
Ramin?
Guesses?
I would say Inception, actually. It sounds backwards. Really cool and almost just as amazing as Forward, actually. So I'm definitely going with Inception.
I'm
going
to go Inception, too. I think that's Inception.
Good call.
Our answer? Points for everybody. It is from Inception. Some of the epic build, end of one of the builds that Hans does in the movie. So points for everybody on that one. We're one for one. Moving on to question number two in reverse here. Is
tell
this
us, yeah.
From Dunkirk, The Dark Knight, or Pearl Harbor?
Say that again? It was
Dunkirk, The Dark Knight, and Pearl Harbor are the options.
I would say that sounded pretty much like The Dark Knight to me.
I'm going to agree with Ramin.
Yeah, I think that's a lock for Dark Knight.
Points for everybody again.
All right.
It's interesting. This is one of those that sounds a little bit different backwards, but the texture's still there.
And the rhythm.
All right. So points for everybody. We're moving on to question three. Everybody's perfect so far. Question number three. Doing Hans Zimmer scores here. Name that score. Is this from Interstellar, Crimson Tide, or Black Hawk Down?
Now it's getting hard.
That's a hard one. Interstellar,
Crimson Tide, Black Hawk Down.
I think it's my turn to go first.
Go ahead.
Otherwise, people are going to think I'm just piggybacking all day.
Fire away.
I'm going to go with Crimson Tide.
Okay.
But that I'm just winging it. I have no
idea.
I'm
going with your wing it. I'll. You know what? If we're going down together, we'll have company. Crimson Tide.
I think I would have to disagree. I think I hear that organ in there, and therefore I would say Interstellar.
I must admit, Ramin has a point.
I was going to say, we should just let him go
points
first.
For Ramin.
Oh, all right.
No fair.
And for Robert and Kenny,
Thank you so
you
much.
You lost that one. So
last time I
loves to he loves to point out that buzzer just to rub. Can you play it forward?
Yeah, here's the full version of this.
Oh, the organ set it off. It's an inside job.
All right, so question number four. Ramin is up a point. The last point is worth double, so there's an opportunity for you guys to come back, but you need Ramin to miss one here. So question number four. Our options here, Sherlock Holmes, Pirates of the Caribbean, or Madagascar. You want to hear it one more time?
Please.
Yeah, I already know it. At least I think I know it. I might embarrass myself.
Sherlock Holmes, Pirates of the Caribbean, Madagascar.
It has a very Jack Sparrow feel to me. That kind of...
Going pirates?
Dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
Ramin, I'm going to chicken out and let somebody else
Yeah, this one I'm actually... this is the first one where I'm also... I might say Pirates too. It's,
you want to hear it again?
It's either Pirates or Sherlock. I don't know.
You want to hear it again?
Yeah. I think I'm going to stick with Pirates too.
Pirates.
Well, just because I'm, you know, like to zig when others zag, I'm going Sherlock. I never would have thought of it, but I'm going to try that.
All right. We do have a winner. Two of them, Kenny and Ramin, both right. get points for that one. Robert. here's the full version of that from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes. It's that right. kind of
yeah.
waddling through that the swaying boat drunk.
All right, so Ramin stays perfect. We're going on to the last question.
Oh, now here. we're rooting for Ramin, so someone wins a prize here.
So question number five is this from, we got a recent film here, Blade Runner 2049, The Da Vinci Code, or 12 Years a Slave? Again, Blade Runner 2049, The Da Vinci Code, or 12 Years a Slave?
Ramin should go last since he's in first place. I think that's how golf works.
I'll go first because I have no idea. But I'm going to say not 12 Years a Slave, because I remember that being a slightly smaller sound of a score. Da Vinci Code, tell me the other one. Which my
Blade Runner 2049, The Da Vinci Code.
I'm saying
Code
Da Vinci Code just
because
Blade Runner was a little more Vangelis-y, synth-y.
Yeah, it's right in the middle.
12 Years is a little smaller, so I'm going Da Vinci.
That was
total guess.
You took all my reasons. I'm going to go with the same answer.
All right.
I'm going to agree with that, too, because I think it all makes sense.
All right. This means if we're all right, Ramin wins. And if we're all wrong, Ramin wins. But here is your answer. Everybody gets points.
Right.
It is from the Da Vinci Code. So Ramin was worried about getting all these right, but he was right on all of these. So he is our winner for today.
Wow, that I think you may have just set a new record for podcasts. You got everything right.
I was very nervous, actually, especially with Hans' scores. No, I thought, I can't screw this up.
I don't know scores very well.
I'm going to tell Hans.
Well, let me just sweep it.
The Dark Knight one, I cheated maybe a little bit too because I worked on that.
I was going to say.
The Batman Begins, so I thought,
any of those
I think.
Scores, do you remember working on? And
yeah, Batman definitely was one. Yeah,
there's a little advantage. Don't we get like extra points? He worked on them.
I know. You guys are supposed to be the experts.
Well,
here,
well.
So,
on the next one, can you do one of my scores?
Yeah,
I just have to make a score.
Right.
I'll go do something on a piano.
We'll
and
play that. It'll
What a great time I've had being with you.
Likewise,
catching up and hearing.
It's been great to
all
have
all your
you
incredible
on.
Music and wonderful achievements, and watching you get a perfect score on Name That Score.
And because you were perfect, that means we're doing a giveaway on our Twitter account, so someone is going to win a prize courtesy of Ramin Djawadi.
All right.
Nice.
Make sure to follow us at Score the Podcast. And a reminder, this is a new show. We're still trying to get it going, so if you like what you hear, please tell a friend, follow us on social media, and be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. And if you want to watch Score, a film music documentary, which inspired this podcast, you can go to score-movie.com and pick that up.
Goodbye for all of us, and thanks, Ramin.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.